The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 1, text number 24. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari. Recorded on June 16th, 2013, in Klang, Malaysia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Evam Yukta Rishikesha Gudakeshena Bharata Senayo Ubhayo Madhye Stapiyadva Ratta Uttamam Anjaya Uvacha Evam Uktarishikesho Gutakeshena Bharata Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Stapayedva Rutotamam Sanjaya Uvacha Evam Ukta Rishikesho Gudakeshena Bharata Senayor Bubhayor Madhye Tapayetva Rutotamam Sanjaya Uvacha. Sanjaya said, Evam, thus, Upta, addressed Rishikesha, Lord Krishna, Gutakeshena, by Arjuna, Bharata, O descendant of Bharat, Senayo, of the armies, Ubhayo, both, Madhye, in the midst, Tapayadva, placing, Ratta Uttamam, the finest chariot. Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharata, having been thus addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. Purport. In this verse, Arjuna is referred to as Gudakesha. Gudaka means sleep, and one who conquers sleep is called Gudakesha. Sleep also means ignorance, so Arjuna conquered both sleep and ignorance because of his friendship with Krishna. As a great devotee of Krishna, he could not forget Krishna even for a moment, because that is the nature of a devotee. Either in waking or in sleep, a devotee of the Lord can never be free from thinking of Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Thus, a devotee of Krishna can conquer both sleep and ignorance simply by thinking of Krishna constantly. This is called Krishna consciousness, or samadhi. As Rishikesha, or the director of the senses and mind of every living entity, Krishna could understand Arjuna's purpose in placing the chariot in the midst of the armies. Thus he did so and spoke as follows. So Srila Prabhupada is making some very, very nice points here to help us in our Krishna consciousness. He describes the definition of the word samadhi. It means to always think of Krishna, constantly. Some people say, I don't need to chant japa because I'm always thinking of Krishna. But if we put a little camera inside their mind and monitor what they're actually thinking about, we would see actually they're thinking so many things not Krishna conscious. It's simply a facade. Oh, I don't need to chant japa because I'm always thinking of Krishna. It's cheating. Anyone who is actually Krishna conscious, they will follow the path of the great acharyas, you see. They won't invent their own path. They will follow the pathway of the great acharyas. Srila Prabhupada has ordered us, every day we must chant at least 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Japa Mala. So one who is actually thinking of Krishna, he will be in great joy and great happiness. He will chant at least 16 rounds every day of Hare Krishna Japa Mala. That's the proof that he's actually thinking about Krishna. When someone says, I'm thinking about Krishna, they refuse to chant, that's the proof they're not thinking about Krishna. If they are really thinking of Krishna, they would do what pleases Krishna. You see. And Krishna clearly states, Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text 14, Satatam Kirtiyanto Mam, always chanting my glory. So this 16 rounds is a minimization. Actually, we should be chanting japa 24 hours a day like Haridas Thakur, where we have to go to work, we have to go to school, we have to get out on the commute. We have so many things to do. So alright, 16 rounds minimization. Prabhupada's mercy. But even now we don't want to do, you see? Even now we don't want to do. So that means we're not thinking about Krishna. We're thinking about money, we're thinking about social prestige, etc. So let us truly become Krishna conscious. If you only become superficially Krishna conscious, what will happen at the time of death? Will you go back to Godhead if you're superficially Krishna conscious? No, you won't. Well, I wear tilak, I go to the temple, you know, I bow down to the deities. You have to actually change your heart. Simply making a show of being a devotee isn't enough. You have to actually change your heart. Where you're absorbed in Krishna, 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 24 hours a day. Everything to Krishna. Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. You see, always connecting with Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Yamam pashati sarvata sarvam chamai pashyati tashahamna sam. Yes, he says, from one who sees everything in me and sees me everywhere, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text number 30. So it's not difficult to be Krishna conscious if you're willing to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. You see, if you want to become Krishna conscious, it is not difficult, but you have to obey the spiritual master. You can't do it on your own at home. I will devise my own system. It will not work. You will be a failure. I guarantee you, you'll be a failure. You see, you have to follow the system given by Rupa Goswami. The first five steps for becoming Krishna conscious are, number one, you take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. That's the first thing. Adaugara Shvayam, the very first principle, take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. Second, get initiated from the spiritual master and learn the process of devotional service from him. The third offense is you have to obey the instructions of the spiritual master. You serve the orders of the spiritual master begrudgingly? No. With love and devotion. Oh, my spiritual master is giving me this order. I must rise early in the morning. Oh, thank you, Guru Maharaj, is so kindly pulling me out of ignorance by making me rise early in the morning, you see. So one follows the order of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. The fourth item is that one follows in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, like we have in the altar. We have Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. We have many, many acharyas in our line of succession. So your spiritual master will engage you how to serve Prabhupada's instructions, how to serve all the acharyas. And the fifth item is that one will inquire from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. Don't be a dumb stone. One should inquire it. You see. One should understand one's strengths and one's weaknesses on the path of bhakti and seek help. How to rectify your weak areas by inquiring from the spiritual master. So, speaking of inquiries, we have a whole stack of inquiries here. So my wife and I will... You want to do it at random, or I pick out ones... You want me to just hand you at random a stack? Huh? All right. I'll just... Anyone that I feel appropriate for you. Okay. Can we chant after breakfast in the morning? Yes. You can chant 24 hours a day, you can chant. But it's easier to get your rounds done early in the morning before breakfast because there's no distractions. And once you take your breakfast, you're going here, you're going there, the phone's ringing, there's so many distractions. The best thing is to get your 16 rounds done before breakfast, but it's not a hard and fast rule. You can chant any time of the day. 24 hours a day we're meant to chant. As a devotee, can we be in a relationship and fall in love in a young age? It's natural that because that love is there between Radha and Krishna, it is natural that a boy will love a girl and a girl will love a boy. It is natural. Therefore, we arrange for marriages, you see. We arrange for marriages that are, let our devotees be happily married. But don't have this boyfriend-girlfriend thing, you see, for sense gratification. Let your parents or your spiritual master, let the devotees arrange. Go through the devotees for arranging a marriage. Don't go off on the basis of sense attraction, because sense attraction appears very nice, but then it becomes very ugly also very quickly. Take your relationship arranged by Vaishnavas. That's the best thing. And if you can remain brahmachari and renounce the whole thing, it's very good. You're better off if you can do that. Not get entangled. You can just concentrate on reading, chanting, and preaching your whole life and no other business. Animals and plants are living organisms. But why Krishna is asking us to eat plants only? Is it also considered we are killing the plants? How do we explain this to non-devotee people? Oh, okay. So, it's a fact that living the plants are also living entities, and you're also killing a carrot when you eat a carrot. That's a fact. So then is it sinful to eat a carrot? What do you say? Is it sinful to eat a carrot? Yes or no? Is it sinful to eat a carrot or not? You're wrong. It is sinful to eat a carrot. It's a living entity. Unless you offer it, it is sinful, you see. Whether you eat vegetables or meat, if it's not offered to Krishna, anything not offered to Krishna is pap, you see. So, of course, you cannot offer the meat. But vegetables we can offer, you see. Vegetables we can offer. So, but if you eat vegetarian food without offering it, you're eating sin. Just like the meat eaters are eating sin, you are also eating sin? Krishna prescribes that we can offer vegetarian foods to him before eating. So in this way, we become free from the reaction of killing that carrot or that potato, you see.
First sin is that if we are not becoming Krishna conscious, that is the first sin. And then not following Krishna's instruction is that another sin, whether you eat carrot or meat or whatever. Following the instructions of the Lord is delivering us from the Lord. That's what Krishna says in the end of the Bhagavad Gita also, that now I have told you this instruction, now you can follow or give it, that's your choice. So you have to choose whether you want to follow Krishna or you don't want to. So if you don't want a sinful reaction or karmic reaction, then you follow Krishna.
Okay, next question. Due to time, place, and circumstances, a devotee couldn't follow the four regulative principles, but is fixed in his chanting, has faith and love for the Lord and the devotees. How would this actually affect his bhakti? Would he be able to achieve Krishna prema or return to Goloka? As long as one is engaged in sense gratification, he's polluted by them. That means he's contaminated by material desires. He may say, well, he's doing it to please his family members. It's not really that he wants to break the principles, but he's doing it to please his spouse or something like that. But that is also sense gratification. He's, instead of pleasing Krishna, he wants to please his spouse. That's it. So that is material desire. Putting somebody else's pleasure before the pleasure of Krishna. So such a person will not be able to go back to Godhead until they learn to put Krishna first.
So it said that one should be if one is chanting japa, they will gradually purify, but it will take longer time. If you really want the result of chanting japa, follow the four regulative principles.
Okay, here's the next question. Dear Gurudev, I feel that ISKCON rules and regulation is very hard to follow. And I feel that if we are not initiated or not interested to follow, why should we follow? I'm sorry, sometimes I feel like I have to give up and sacrifice and be like a saint. Why do we have to give up all of our likes and live like a saint if we don't have interest to follow? We can't force ourselves, right? Well, the thing is, you're serving your senses right now. There's Indriya Seva and there's Krishna Seva. You're saying, well, I feel much more natural just serving my senses. Where have your senses taken you? And you've been serving them faithfully for millions and millions of lifetimes. Where have your senses taken you? This means you don't want to serve Krishna, you want to serve your senses this lifetime again, even though you got the opportunity of a human birth, even though you got the opportunity of coming and tying that with the greatest spiritual master in the history of Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada, still you're so stupid, you want to keep serving your senses. Don't be a less intelligent fool. You have to realize, I've gotten this opportunity, let me take advantage of it and follow the instructions of Guru and Krishna. Tamasi ma jyotirmama. Don't remain in the darkness, come to the light. You say, but I'm attracted to the darkness. I'm attracted to suffering. I don't really want to be fully happy because I find suffering very, very comfortable. It's like the worm, you know, the worm, he was living in an abominable condition in the stool, and somebody felt sorry for the worm. They pulled him out of the stool to give him a nice home and a lotus flower. And what did he do? He crawled back into the stool. So why are you attracted to the stool? Don't be a fool, a stool fool. You see? Get out of the stool, chant Hare Krishna, follow the instructions of Guru and Krishna, and become a Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul.
you have gotten the human life. The human life means responsibility to get out of the cycle of birth and death. And if you don't live like that, then you are living like an animal. Nothing beyond the animal. You are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That is animal propensity, and that's what we are doing. Otherwise, it's called two-legged animal. Nothing better than that. So get over the animal platform, come to the human. You have gotten a very good body. It's a good ship to cross over the ocean of nascence. So take it that.
Many of them say Radharani Mata is more important than Tulsi Mata. How is that? Why are you making all these distinctions? Why don't you just worship Tulsi Devi and worship Radharani? Why are you making these distinctions? Why don't you just surrender to Krishna and follow Prabhupada's instruction to worship Mother Radharani and Tulsi also? Why you have to make all these distinctions? Who is more important? Why are you worried about such things? You see, you're instead of surrendering, you're trying to say, well, who is more important, Radharani or Tulsi Devi? I mean, come on, just stop all this mental gymnastics and surrender, bow down to Radharani and to Tulsi Maharani. Why are you trying to divert yourself away from the process of surrender? Is it wrong to eat grain prasadam after breaking a fast in a festival? There's what's known as the Hari Bhakti Vilas. There is such a rule mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. But Prabhupada said all the rules and regulations of the Hari Bhakti Vilas are not practical for us. I mean, there's even a rule that you can't walk while you're chanting japa. You have to sit. But Prabhupada, you can see the video, Prabhupada's walking back and forth in his room. Prabhupada didn't think that we had to follow all the rules. The Hari Bhakti Vilas is many, many volumes, very detailed rules about every little teeny weeny thing. It's not that we have to follow every rule of the Hari Bhakti Vilas. I was with Srila Prabhupada in New Vrindavan in 1972. We celebrated Janmashtami, and we had a fasting all day till midnight, and we took a feast with grains in it, and Prabhupada was there. You see? So it's not a hard and fast rule, although many temples are doing it now, and I don't want to rock the boat. You don't have to eat grains. One godbrother explained it like this. He said, actually, according to the Hari Bhakti Vilas, you're supposed to have a full feast the next day with grains. In other words, it's a two-day, you have to again celebrate the next day. But the next day everybody goes to work. And there's no facility for a feast the second day. The fast is not fully observed until you take the grains. You see. So, and he argued then that actually it's better, if you can't observe a feast the next day, it's better to take grains. But then again, I don't want to rock the boat. Because you may have certain policies here. At our center, we have grain prasadam on Gaur Purnima and Janmashtami. And it's easier to make an attractive feast for the public. Because we want to attract them to prasadam. It's easier to make a feast that is very, very attractive to the public if you have grains. You can make cakes and pies and, you know, gulab jamun. So many things that may have grains in them. And you can make a full-on feast to make the celebration more ecstatic for all the people who come. But an Ekadasi feast is the more simple feast. It's not as enlivening of a feast in that sense. I'm going to add to that. I'll go to another one. If jealousy enters when we do service because of other people's enviousness, we can't do the service, how to go about it, what to do about it. Now, this is not clear. Is it their jealousy or your jealousy? Then it's their jealousy, okay. Mm-hmm. Actually, a devotee is not concerned about other people's jealousy. He does his duty. That's so. I'll give you an example. Srila Prabhupada. His godbrothers are very, very envious. Do you know that in Mayapur, his godbrothers sent gundas to attack our temple? Prabhupada's godbrothers sent the gundas to attack the Mayapur temple. That's how envious they were. Now that's pretty envious, you see. Did Prabhupada let that stop his enthusiasm for preaching? No. So, we may be criticized. Actually, when somebody criticized me, oh, he travels too much. In a lecture in Mayapur, one sannyasi was criticizing me by name in front of all the devotees that Sankarshan Das Adhikari travels too much. I was thinking he must be envious because I travel more than he does. Sannyasi is supposed to travel and I'm traveling more than he is, so he has to find fault with me for traveling so much. So sometimes people are envious and you just go on with your service. You don't let it distract you. That's all. Prabhupada did that and we have to do the same thing. Is it right or wrong to read books from other parampara other than His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada's books? Have you read all the Prabhupada's books cover to cover? Scrutinizingly. Every one of them. Yes or no? No? Then don't read any books except for Prabhupada's books. If you've thoroughly studied all of Prabhupada's books, then take permission from your spiritual master if you want to read other books. And it's a disgrace. You haven't even read Prabhupada's books and you want to read other books? It's a disgrace. It's a damn disgrace. And then you'll think you know something more than Prabhupada. You can find fault with. This is what they do. They read other books and they think, I know something more than Prabhupada. I know better than Srila Prabhupada. Just see how envy creeps in. You see, they become envious of Prabhupada. So just read, until you've scrutinizing and read all of Prabhupada's books, every one of them, cover to cover. Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Nectar of Devotion, Krishna Book, Bhagavad Gita, etc., etc., etc. And just stick to Prabhupada's books. Actually, Prabhupada said we shouldn't read any other books. That's what he said. That was his instruction, not to read any other books. But he does mention in his purports that some other books are good. So, but one shouldn't go to those other books until you've read all the Prabhupada books. That's the proper etiquette of respect for Srila Prabhupada.
Mentioned in the beginning of the lecture, we just mentioned in the beginning of the lecture that the fourth instructions by Rupa Goswami is that one should follow in the footsteps of previous acharyas only under the guidance of the spiritual master. So we should not have that freedom to go jumping over the head of the spiritual master.
Okay, next question. People love one another for a short while, but after they live with each other out of respect or responsibility. Why does that happen? This is Krishna consciousness. This is not a Krishna conscious question about how to advance in Krishna consciousness. How to control our mind for steady, high quality chanting on a daily basis? Now that's a nice Krishna conscious question. You may be surprised to hear Prabhupada gave one instruction to my god sister, Vallabhi Devi Dasi, about chanting japa. Prabhupada told her this. He said, when you chant japa, feel the presence of Krishna. That's an amazing instruction, isn't it? When you chant japa, try to feel the presence of Krishna. Because if you actually understand that Krishna has come, the Supreme Personality of God, it has come and He is blessing me with His association. So why would you want to put your attention anywhere else when Krishna has come? Do you think it's some blind or just some false propaganda, some euphemism, some false propaganda that Krishna has come as His holy name? Well, Krishna has personally come. Now, how will you receive Him? If Krishna came to your house, would you just ignore Him and go and do some nonsense? Or would you give Him your full attention? So He's coming every day in the form of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you're not giving Him full attention? That's offensive. Don't be offensive. Give Krishna your full attention. How do we convince someone that God exists? Well, they have to be open-minded, I can tell you first of all. If they're a closed-minded atheist who wants to cram atheism down your throat, you're going to have a tough time convincing them that God exists. The best thing to do is convince them that atheism is absurd. That's the first thing. If you want to convince an atheist that God exists, don't start off doing that. First of all, you have to completely smash his atheism. That's step number one. Completely smash his atheism to shreds, that he has no philosophical leg to stand on. You see? What do the atheists say? They say that the universe came out of absolutely nothing. There's one famous atheistic scientist, Dr. Stephen Hawking. He says the universe came out of absolutely nothing. But where's the scientific experiment to prove that anything can come out of nothing? You see? That's simply dogma. That is simply blind faith dogma. There's no experiment you can do to that you can get something out of nothing. But yet he says the universe comes out of absolutely nothing. Atheism says everything comes out of nothing. So the first thing you have to do is defeat atheism. That's step number one. Completely smash atheism. And then when they go, wow, you're really right. Yeah, you're really right. It's true that it's never been proven scientifically that something can come out of nothing. Well, maybe there's another explanation. Then they're a little receptive. You see, after you smash their atheism and you show them it's an absurd philosophy, then you can introduce the idea that every machine has an operator. We can study, scientifically analyze every machine in the whole world, and we will see that every machine requires an operator to function. It cannot function without an operator. And we can also study the cosmos, the universe, and we can see it possesses the qualities of a machine. It operates just like a machine. Therefore, we can scientifically deduce that as every machine requires an operator, the universal machine requires a universal operator. So there's your proof. Another proof is this. You have a father, right? Your father has a father?
Yes.
And his father has a father?
Yes.
Who has a father? Who has a father? Who has a father? You go back until you come to the father who has no father. That is God. You see? It's not difficult to prove God if somebody is open-minded. But if someone is an atheist and they are antagonistic against God, no matter what you say, they will shoot it down. So first you have to shoot them down to where they have no weapons left. You have to disarm them philosophically. And then you can establish the science of God. What is the difference between Indian food and Western food cooked by devotees and offered to God? Can devotees offer Western food to Krishna? Yes, but Prabhupada taught us, rasagula, sandesh, etc. Baba didn't teach us how to make pizza for Krishna. He didn't teach us how to make ice cream for Krishna or cake. But Prabhupada accepted it also. Prabhupada accepted ice cream prasadam. He accepted cake also for his Vyasa Puja. They made birthday cake. He accepted, even though it's Western, he accepted. So Krishna is flexible, but actually the traditional, our system is the traditional foods are actually the standard diet for Krishna. You see. The other things can be there sometimes, but the basis should be the standard items like we read. You know that song by Bhaktivedanta Thakur? Bhaja Bhakata. It gives Krishna's menu. You heard that song? Bhoga Arati, it's called. It's a very, very nice song. Bhaja Bhakata Vatsala Shigora Hari Luchi Chini Sarpudi Ladu Rasavali. It's a menu. The song is a menu. You get to sing Krishna's menu, and there's no pizza in there. And it's a wonderful feast. Okay, how do we convince Buddhists about the beauty of Krishna consciousness? I had a Buddhist student who felt that attaining nirvana was a better goal to achieve than going back to Godhead. Again, it depends if they're open-minded or not. If they're dogmatic, you have to defeat them, first of all. But actually, Lord Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna, who taught ahimsa, non-violence, to stop the people of India from killing the cows. He was actually Krishna himself. And the nirvana that he spoke of is actually impersonal type of liberation. It's not a permanent liberation. Their nirvana is only a temporary release from material existence. And then after some time in nirvana, one falls back again to material existence. This is why the bhakti is described in the Bhagavatam by this word, nirvana vilambitani. That which minimizes the value of Buddhistic nirvana. It's described in the Bhagavatam. Okay. How to get rid of bad habits like getting up late or being involved in frivolous activities. The way to give up the bad habit of getting up late is to get a good alarm clock and set it early. And if that doesn't work, have two alarm clocks. On my iPhone, you can set as many times as you want. 3:01, 3 o'clock, 3:01, 3:02. You can set, you can go off every minute for a whole hour. So, you know, even if you turn it off once, another 30 seconds, it'll come on again, another 60 seconds. So if you're determined to get up, there's definitely ways to do it. You just have to have the desire and set that alarm clock, you see, and do it. Pray to Krishna before you take rest. My dear Lord, please bless me. I can get up early tomorrow morning, you see. And as far as being involved with frivolous activities, engage in transcendental activities. Do some preaching. Do some service at the temple. What is the significance of Gayatri Mantra and when is a person qualified to know it? The popular Gayatri Mantra is one of many Gayatri Mantras. When we give our disciples second initiation, they get seven Gayatri Mantras. So the popular Gayatri Mantra is there. But these are actually meant to be chanted by those who are twice born. Prabhupada's system was that once you're first initiated and you prove that you're able to successfully carry out your vow of chanting 16 rounds and following the principles, then we will certify you as a brahmana and we will give you Gayatri Mantra. So, we as followers of Prabhupada, we follow that system. Can initiated devotees eat in Chinese vegetarian shops? Well, are they devotee Chinese? Is it a prasadam Chinese? No. Why are you eating in a Chinese restaurant? Why are you? My wife and I fly all over the world. It's at least 60 flights a year we take. 60. How many times do we eat the airplane food? Zero. And all these years, not one time. We've been circling the globe for years. We must have flown. Actually, we have what's called million-miler status with the American Airlines. We've flown over 1 million miles, and so many meals have been offered to us. We've never at one time taken any of the meals, even the vegetarian meals we don't take, because they're cooked by karmis. Now, if they will have some devotees cook those, you know, cook the meal and offer them to Krishna, and then put them on the airplane, we will take. But it's cooked by karmi, you see, so we don't take. So, if there's an emergency, sure. But I don't think this is an emergency situation. It's just for your tongue. So give up this nonsense sense gratification. If you have, take some prasadam from your home and carry a little brown bag. In the U.S. we call it brown bagging it. Carry your lunch with you. When I was a kid in school, there was a cafeteria. I didn't eat in the cafeteria. My mother gave me I had a lunch box. I took my lunch every day, all the way through all those years I went to the school. I never one time ate the cafeteria food. I always ate what my mother packed at home and gave me my lunch box, you see. So take your prasadam from home. Don't eat this food cooked by non-devotees. If the initiated devotees do Abarath? What's this? Abarath?
Offense.
Aparab, maybe. It's spelled A-B-R-A-T. Abarat. I think they meant Aparab. Okay. It's spelled Aparad. A-P-A-R-A-D-H. It's not A-B-A-R-A. Like Ratha? Rathakart? Abarath? No. It's Aparad. If initiated devotees do aparad, will the guru be affected also? Yes. The guru can get sick. He can have bad dreams. So don't torture your spiritual master. Early in the morning before bathing, can we chant? Yes. You can chant 24 hours a day. Before bathing, after bathing. You can chant while you're bathing also. Not with your beads, but you can chant on your lips while you're taking bath, Prabhupada said. You can chant while you're taking bath also. You get into the shower, you're bathing your body and your mind simultaneously. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. You see, bathing your body and your mind simultaneously. Wait.
But don't chant your japa while hearing the lecture.
Yeah, we saw one devotee, he would sleep during the japa period, and then he would bring his japa beads to the class, and he'd sit there during class and chant his rounds. Yeah. That's not good. Can a devotee wake up around 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. and chant Hare Krishna with bead before bathing? Yeah? Because it maybe the other family members will be disturbed if you take bath that early in the morning. So there's no harm. Prabhupada, so far as I've heard, he would chant early in the morning before taking his bath. So the chanting itself is a bath. My mother is about 70 years old. She is uneducated. She only chants the Maha Mantra 32 rounds a day. Only? Or without chanting Guru Mantra and Panchatattva. It's not necessary. For japa chanting, you don't have to chant Panchatattva and Guru Mantra. This is not... You can, but it's not required. And you've heard the japa tape for Prabhupada chanting japa? Does he chant the Panchatattva mantra? No. Does he chant the mantra to his Guru Maharaj? No. Prabhupada never said that we have to chant anything between each round. If you want to do it, that's fine, but it's not a policy. If you want to do it, great, do it. But it's not a policy. When I joined, nobody did that. Nobody. And Prabhupada told me I was trained up under the expert guidance of Vishnujana Maharaj, and I was never told I had to chant the Guru Mantra and the Panchatantra Mantra before I chanted my japa. I never was told such a thing. That was not the system. But some devotees said this is very nice and they wanted to make it a policy. But you can't make a policy. Prabhupada can make a policy. We cannot make a policy. Prabhupada is the one who you can do things out of inspiration, but you can't make it a policy for the temple and the devotees. Everybody has to do this. No, Prabhupada did not give such a policy. It's an option. It's a nice option. But it's not something you have to do.
But I've seen also the devotees not only chanting Guru Mantra and Panchatattva Mantra, they go on increasing each time, increasing different mantras. They go on saying Vrindayai Tulsi Devi Priyakeshwascha and go on and on in different mantras before they start the second round.
Let's finish the question now. She said she can't remember them. These two mantras, she only knows Maha Mantra. Can she take initiation? Can the Guru accept her? Yes, we can certainly, if a woman is chanting 32 rounds a day and she's following our principle, and she has a hard time remembering mantras, we can certainly give her initiation. It's not a problem. If the temple authorities recommend that she's chanting at least 16 rounds a day and following our principles, we can certainly give a 70-year-old woman a chance to go back to Godhead. That's it. If medications containing bovine and gelatin is prescribed to a devotee having an illness, should the devotee refuse to take this medication? If you can avoid it, do it. But if it's unavoidable and it's required for your health, go ahead and take it. Prabhupada said devotees could take insulin. In those days, insulin was made from, I think, a calf liver or something. Now they have synthetic insulin. Now if you have to do it, it's required for your health, you can do it. Although if you really get creative, just like I have a doctor who put me on some herbal medicine for my ears, try to cure my ear problem. And he gave a whole list of herbs that I should take regularly. And I saw that gelatin. But then I got on the internet and I found the same thing without gelatin. So I'm able to take completely vegetarian version of what he prescribed, even though some of what he prescribed was gelatin. So if you're really, you can talk to your physician about it and say, I need, if at all possible, I need to have a non-meat version of this medicine. Tell him the situation. If he's a good physician, he'll try his best to help me. If he doesn't, get a new doctor. He's a rascal. What is the view of ISKCON in the event where a devotee has refused medication because of the contamination? Our view is, don't be a fanatic. Do what is needed to keep your body healthy, even if you have to take... In fact, you may be shocked to hear this, but it's Prabhupada said it, you can hear it on the MP3 recording. In New Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, according to Ayurveda, there's a type of medicine made by throwing a live goat into boiling ghee. A type of Ayurvedic medicine. Prabhupada said, for medicine, even animals can be used. So we try to avoid it, but if there's some dire situation, you have to have something with an animal product in it, it's okay. According to Srila Prabhupada, it's his words, not my words. The devotee wishes not to contaminate his or her devotion in any circumstance. The illness may be life-threatening. I've already answered it. Anything you want to add? Okay. Any more questions? This is the last one. I can take a few more. Until 9 o'clock, is it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I can take one or two more if anyone has questions. Okay, chanting. Why is it the most difficult activity? Actually, it is not the most difficult activity. This is your mistake. Whoever asked this question, chanting is not the most difficult activity. What if all of your activities are Krishna conscious related, but no chanting took place? That means you're acting in the mode of passion. And that means sooner or later your chanting, your service will stop. You say, I like service, but I don't like chanting. That means you're in the mode of passion. Passion is good. We have no objection to your passion, but you have to temper it with goodness. Otherwise, it will degrade into ignorance eventually. So you have to learn how to... In other words, the point is you don't know how to meditate. You don't know the art of meditation. You only know how to do things. But the difficulty is, by doing things, you become recognized. Well, I did this and I did that. You see, there's a tinge of pride there. If you just do things, but you don't want to chant. It's pride. There's a tinge of pride there, you see. So you have to learn how to chant. And if you'll try it early in the morning before sunrise, it's very easy. It means right now you're just totally in the mode of passion. So you have to add the element of sattva, because you cannot achieve pure bhakti until you leave. First you must come to the mode of goodness. You have not come to the mode of goodness. Unless you come to the mode of goodness, you cannot achieve pure bhakti. It's not possible.
I was just saying, if somebody is very eager to do the service, chanting is another way of service. And the chanting is, we are begging for more service. So if you really are doing service, then you will ask and you will not stop chanting. You will want to chant more, because the chanting, you can get more service.
So now the last question. Is thinking of Krishna the same as chanting? On one level it is, but we're not on that level. For us, there's a big difference, because our thinking of Krishna is... We are not able to fully absorb ourselves in Krishna Smaranam, that's the thing. We're thinking about our bodies, we're thinking about our jobs, thinking about our families. So many things we're thinking about. Don't tell me you're only thinking about Krishna. That's a bunch of nonsense. You're not only thinking about Krishna. That's why you need to chant.
If you are always thinking about Krishna, you will want to chant.
That's right. If you're really thinking of Krishna, you'll be inspired to chant. If you're not inspired to chant, means you're not always thinking of Krishna. You're thinking of your own sense gratification. That's why you're not chanting. Especially when the person was engaged in other Krishna-related activities. It's the same thing. He's serving and he's getting recognized for his service, and he feels a certain buzz of being recognized. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm being recognized. But he's not developing the mode of goodness. And he won't make it in Krishna consciousness. He won't be able to go back to Godhead until he develops a taste for the name. Unless you have developed a taste for Krishna's name, you will not attain the spiritual world. You have to develop a taste for Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Ruchi is required. You cannot get prema without Nama Ruchi, without taste for the name.
Which is recommended. And we have to do according to the instruction and guidance, not on our wings.
All right, so that's it. Our time is up. And we thank you all very, very much for your participation in the Krishna consciousness movement. Please become very serious to develop Nama Ruchi and pure bhakti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.